The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
Dr. Tom Rozelle live, right now, on 105.9 FM WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle, live in studio, waiting to take your calls on anything that you'd like to talk about. But you know what? We have a subject, and we have a presenter. And the subject is really something that you've all heard about, something that's been out in the marketplace. There's advertising all about it, fix it this way. What are we talking about? We're talking about foot pain. You know, plantar fasciitis, diabetes, diabetic neuropathy, all kinds of other foot types of conditions. And, you know, it's football season. It's the tail end of baseball season. Wild Nats, this unbelievable situation that has come about, right? And all the other folks that, like you and I, that are out there walking and running and, you know, trying to keep our lives intact. And our feet hurt, and we don't even want to get on them. And we've done everything. We've gone to this store and that store and tried orthotics. And at the end of the day, they might help for a while, but, and we've spent literally in some situations thousands of dollars trying to figure it out, and we end up with the same old, a foot that is killing us. Well, plantar fasciitis and diabetic neuropathies and other things of that nature have a cause, and they're always fixable, providing that you can identify with the triggering mechanism and not treat them as a global. But in studio, and someone who will be your host, your presenter at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax this coming Wednesday evening, the 30th of October, 7 p.m., none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. And Dr. Browning, hi, welcome.
Always good to be here, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
It's fun. It's fun to be with you because it's an easy flow. But more importantly, it's a flow that is just, you know, loaded with actual applicable data. And this is an area that affects so many people, thousands upon thousands of people, you know, throughout the country and the world, actually. So let's start out with, you know, this. I want to take the veil off of all this advertising that's out there. We're going to go into multiple conditions, you know, coming up. We're getting into the wintertime and ski season. People like to, you know, get in there, but their feet hurt. And if their feet hurt and their ankles hurt and so forth, they can't ski. But more importantly, you've heard the commercials as well as I have. And, you know, they're talking about diabetic neuropathic pain or just neuropathy, period. And their doctor says, well, your feet hurt, so you must have neuropathic pain or neuropathy. And they have these people coming in and they set up a treatment program that involves laser therapy, but it involves other things. But we'll get to that later on. But what I want to talk about is, let's define what neuropathic pain really is, and then let's kind of branch off into there. And I'm going to ask you, you know, ultimately, how do you treat it and so forth. But I know this Wednesday evening, you're going to get into very specifics. I think people are going to be surprised if they attend. They're going to go home with data that they didn't expect to have. But let's talk about that neuropathic pain.
Well, when you're talking about neuropathies, and classically we think of the diabetic neuropathy, which means that as a person's blood sugar goes higher and higher, that sugar has to go somewhere. So it infiltrates the nerves in our distal part of our body, our feet, our hands. So when those nerves get gunked up with the sugars, then they don't work. And then they start to cause numbness or paresthesia. That's abnormal feeling. So the problem becomes this, that we often put all of these abnormal sensations into this basket and term it a neuropathy. Well, that might not be the case. It might be coming from somewhere else. So I see a lot of patients, and I'm sure you do too, who have pain in their feet and they've been told it's a neuropathy, and then they give them gabapentin or all these other different medications to somehow handle it, which a lot of times it doesn't. But the problem often is not coming from the foot itself. It might be a nerve somewhere else in the body, maybe even the low back.
So we have the trace, you know, from the foot to the ankle to the knee and take it all the way up to see what's really taking place. Now, when you use the term neuropathy or neuropathic pain, is it always due to a diabetic something-something, an inflammatory condition, or how would you differentiate them? Are there other triggering mechanisms that cause pain that show up as this inflammatory irritation of the nerves?
Yeah, so it certainly can be from a metabolic cause, that's the diabetes. It can be also from a compressive cause. The nerve can be physically compressed somewhere in the low back, in the leg, in the foot itself. It can also be a vascular issue. The blood supply to the foot or to those nerves in the foot becomes less. So you have to tease through all those things to figure out what it is. If not, you're going to get caught up in this cyclical process of going from the neurologist to a vascular doctor to a podiatrist, and the process keeps on going because one doc kicks the can down the road to the next because they definitively can't diagnose it.
In your opinion, when it comes to neuropathic pain, and in the second half of the program, I want to touch a little bit on the treatment process, but I want to differentiate some other conditions right now. In your opinion, when it comes to neuropathic pain, of any sort, whether it's a vascular pattern, inflammatory something, if it's just the way the patient is walking and their shoe formation and so forth, but diabetic conditions, the beginning stages, and some people, they're in that pre-diabetic stage. Their A1C is in the neighborhood of 5.8, 5.9, 6, 6.1, but they're showing symptoms. How much of this, again, based on your clinical experience, can be resolved and turned around?
Well, certainly, if the blood sugar is creeping higher, that has to be addressed because not only is it going to possibly affect their neuropathy, but it's going to metabolically cause a lot of issues throughout the rest of the body. So to me, that's kind of a no-brainer. The person's diet is poor, they don't exercise. These are things that just need to be addressed just to improve their health. Having said that, the body is pretty tolerant and it can handle a lot of abuse. We can have high blood sugar for a long period of time. So the lure that often catches the fish, being us in medicine, is when the blood sugar is high, we're going to almost always blame the neuropathy, quote unquote, the neuropathy on that high blood sugar. So a lot of times it's not, but it just becomes a convenient way of just telling the person what they have and moving them along.
My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning. He'll be your host, your presenter, this Wednesday, the 30th, 7 p.m. at the Rozell Center for Healing in Fairfax. By the way, the office is really, really close to the Beltway. We're like a half of a mile off the National Capital Beltway, and it's quick. It's Route 50, boom, you're there. Take an opportunity. If you've been suffering with any kind of foot pain or discomfort, this is an opportunity to go home with some information. And those of you who heard Dr. Browning in the past know this guy is amazing when it comes to giving information. He takes things that are super complex and make them really easy and applicable. So join us. All you have to do is go online at rozellcare.com and register online, or simply call the office at 703-698-7117. That's 703-698-7117. Harlan, let's take it the next step. The program is not just about neuropathic pain. Let's differentiate the kind of problems that affect feet. My feet hurt. And they go into a doc, they've been able to say, well, you have plantar fasciitis. And so what does that really mean? What's a plantar fasciitis?
Well, plantar fasciitis is an inflammation of the tissue in the foot, the fascia, which is a connective wrapping that more or less holds muscles in place and connects them to bones and other structures. So plantar fasciitis is the end product of some sort of mechanical dysfunction. In other words, maybe the foot doesn't go through its normal motion, or maybe we even have something upstream from it. I see this a lot. A person has very tight hips, so they turn their leg out to accommodate the hip. Well, the foot has to bear all of that end product, so then it prematurely will collapse, and then the tissue will start to fatigue. It's an overuse injury, not unlike a tennis elbow or golfer's elbow or those types of things. Those are injuries that are sustained over time because the tissue has been taken past its normal its normal role.
So when you're dealing with this type of condition, basically you're describing a domino effect in the opposite direction. Instead of from down on the foot all the way up, you're talking about the hip and mechanics that can disturb the spine affecting the knee and the foot and the ankle.
Absolutely. It can go both ways. So you need to look at the mechanics of the foot, the position of the leg, the way the person swings their leg, You know, when I sit with a patient that has lower extremity problems, there's three big things that I really look at that are important for them to have normal function. And it all involves the ability to extend things, meaning we can take a joint into what's called flexion, we can bend it, and we can go the opposite way, is extend it. So the things that I classically see is people lack either extension in their big toe, they can't extend it or lift the big toe up, maybe they've got a bunion there. They can't bring their ankle up. It's called dorsiflexion. They can't bring it above 90 degrees. And very often they can't extend their hip. Maybe they have one, maybe they have two, maybe they have three of those. But if we have those in place, that's not a good remedy for mechanics that are healthy for us. So we will often see the body will break down and then we start to adapt to it. And we see these little hitches that people have when they walk. You can see they do things a little bit differently on one side versus the other.
You know, you talked about dorsiflexion of the foot, and particularly the big toe. And when you can't hold those toes up, if you will, just isolating the toes, how often, you know, we can talk the mechanics of the foot, and one of the things that we see is a dropped middle long arch, middle longitudinal arch. And you can support that, and all of a sudden you see the toes get strong. So the question becomes, when you see mechanics like that, you know, the first thought process in the field is to support the arch. Is it the arch or is it something affecting the arch? And which one do you, how do you fix, you know, which one do you distinguish and how do you distinguish it and how do you fix it?
You know, chicken or egg, you know, you can pick your poison. We make orthotics in the office. We have a great lab in Canada, and, when I first started to get involved with having orthotics made, I used to think it was the panacea to all foot problems. Well, the longer I've been in practice and from personal experience, I've realized that you don't want to prematurely support the foot without addressing its dysfunctions and not rehabilitating it, because very often you're just going to lock in the problem. So there's all these great pop-up stores that are coming out where people can go in there and get footbeds and all these different things. And I see these folks all the time. They'll say, hey, I got this orthotic. I spent $140. It's making things actually worse. Well, it's because you're more or less reinforcing your dysfunction. So I guess what I'm saying is orthotics have their place, but that's really after we've assessed the problem and tried to restore it as much to normal as we can. Because if you don't do that, you're going to have probably more issues.
Are orthotics permanent?
No, I don't think they are, and I can speak from personal experience that the foot actually adapts over time. There's great technology. We use it in the office, things that look at gait scan. It looks at pressure, both statically and actively. And what you'll find is when you rehabilitate a foot without an orthotic, you'll often see their gait changes. The same thing happens when you put them in an orthotic. So what I often will do is when a person's orthotics are getting old, 6-8 years, we'll rescan them. And sometimes the person's mechanics when they walk barefoot is really, really pretty good. So I suggest to them, well, like, let's try to go without the orthotic. And I'd say more times than not, the person does just as well as they did before with the orthotic. And then they go about their business, and lo and behold, 3 years later, they forgot that they were ever wearing them.
You know, two simple things that I have patients do when, you know, they come in and they're complaining of foot pain. That's not a diabetic neuropathic pain. I got dropped arches. I'll have them use a golf ball, and I have them walk around the house barefooted.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the golf ball, you put it on the floor, and you just roll it and roll it and roll it. The first couple of times you do it might leave the foot sore because there's a lot of trigger point and hot spots, if you will, in the area. And then mechanically go barefooted in the house. And I mean barefooted. No socks, anything else. Just walk around so you can get better, call it proprioception, if you will, and it begins to rehabilitate those muscle patterns.
Yeah, and on the flip side, the shoes that we wear have a huge impact. So high heels, in my opinion, are a no-no. Flip-flops, I wear them, but you don't want to wear them unless you're walking around in the house. You don't want to wear them walking from parking your car to the Nats game, for example. If you're walking a mile, that causes the foot to do things differently. You start to grip with the toes when you really shouldn't do that. So look at your shoes first and foremost when you have a foot problem, because you might be able to fix the issue yourself.
You know, when people get up and walk and they stand up, the mechanics are in the foot and the calf, you know, and there's a mechanical what comes first, Right. And you can almost tell when a person tries to get up without holding on to anything that that foot isn't working. What would our audience look at if they thought that, you know, if they were watching their husband and their wife, that they got a foot problem that may be affecting other parts of the body?
Probably the way that they position the leg. Do they turn the leg out more? Do they turn it in more? Do they seem to list to one side versus the other when they stand or when they walk? Those are usually pretty good indicators that there's some sort of adaptation that might be coming from the foot.
You know, it's really interesting because we've had the opportunity of treating many professional athletes as well as amateurs like, you know, you and me. And, you know, we've been out there doing our thing for years. We're on our feet hours and hours during the day. And, you know, we're walking around on cement floors. And so that has an impact on the foot, on the ankle, on the knee. And, you know, when we get into the rest of the program, I want to talk about that environmental impact, but I also want to talk about the things that we can do to make life different and better, you know, for all of us. It's an important situation. People don't realize how important the feet are. And, you know, we have acupuncture points, we have reflex points, we have muscles that act in a chain because one muscle affects another. They're not isolated, and that's the thing that I think we have to really let our audience know. Feet are not isolated all by themselves. We're coming up to a point we've got to take a break. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, will be your host, your presenter, this Wednesday evening, the 30th at 7 p.m. at the Results Center for Healing. And I promise you, this will be a night that you go home with a tremendous amount of data. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We are in studio. My guest today will be your host, your presenter this Wednesday evening, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. We're talking about an unfortunate condition that affects so many people, your feet, and why they ache, and why when you're walking around, you don't want to be walking around. You want to either get off of them or put them on clouds. Well, everything from diabetic neuropathic pain to plantar fasciitis to things that just kind of go bump in the night because you've lost your arch in your foot. And, you know, at the end of the day is, where is it coming from, and where, what can you do to fix it? Are they fixable? Dr. Harlan, let's go back and, you know, kind of revisit a little bit, and let's start talking about the mechanical applications. We just have a few minutes before we get in the second half of the program. But talk about, just kind of globally for our audience right now, the different things that can affect pain in the foot and that just seem to be isolated. And then as we come back in the second half, I want to talk a little bit about as it migrates up into the calf and can affect the knee and so forth. But we're talking about things that start in the feet.
Well, there's certainly a lot of pain generators in the foot. So there's the fascia we talked about. And if that's aggressive enough and it progresses enough, then we can get heel spurs. We've all heard of those. We can get pinching of the actual nerves that as they pass between the bones of the foot. That's called a neuroma. That's a callus that forms around a nerve. It's very common. We can also, you know, get other types of injuries to the metatarsals, the smaller bones, where they become inflamed. So there's lots of things in the feet that can cause discomfort. We can also have pain being referred upstream. Okay, you know, one of the things that I will often see is people will have compressed nerves in the low back, maybe an undiagnosed disc that doesn't cause a lot of back problems, but it's causing them to have numbness or some sort of discomfort in the foot. The same thing holds true when we get compression of some of the nerves in the back of the calf. It'll refer pain down there as well. So there's a lot of different areas that will generate the pain. So the important part is to figure out where it's coming from. What I try to do is to see if I can reproduce the pain. If you can reproduce it, then you're getting down to where you need to be.
Question, you know, and I've seen this several times over the years, more than several times, obviously, with professional athletes and athletes generally, that their foot pain is significant. They start getting these what's called microfractures, and it's not broken, but you know, on X-ray you can see these lines of calcification, so you know there's been some irritation, compression in the area. And it'll put a basketball player out, it'll put a football player out. If somebody's playing tennis, their feet just hurt, they go every place. And even if they put orthotics in the shoe, nothing seems to fix that. What's your thought process?
Well, you're speaking of stress fractures. That, you know, that's common with people that run a lot. Or I should say it's more apt to happen with folks that run a lot. That usually means that their running mechanics are not very good, or the shoes that they're wearing aren't good, or in some cases, maybe they just don't have good bone density. And you've got to think about that. You know, even someone that's 38 might not have great bone density because their diet might be miserable. So you have to look at all of those things. And then just some folks aren't made to put a lot of miles on their feet. You know, there's some folks that shouldn't be distance runners, and they want to be distance runners. So I have this conversation a few times a year with them, and it's hard to change their mindset, but that's just the reality of it.
You know, one of the things you mentioned, a younger person in their 30s, and unfortunately I've seen a lot of that, you know, with people over the years, and it's a dietary pattern that is endemic, if you will, epidemic, if you will, to our society, with the huge amounts of sodas and sugars and things of that nature, because the body then goes acidic and the body tries to protect itself by pulling a buffering agent out to make it neutral, and that's calcium. And so you take it out of the bone storage. There was, you know, back in the day when the basketball team here in town was called the Bullets, there was a guard that was tremendous, but he would miss multiple games a year. And what it was, the guy was drinking at least a liter of soda every day, and the phosphoric acid in it was destroying his bone density. And then the other piece, obviously, is the low levels of vitamin D, particularly in northern latitudes. You know, is that consistent with what, you know, what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you could take it one step further. There's just a lot of people who overtrain, meaning that they shift their body from being anabolic, that's to build things up, and that's what we want, to being more catabolic, and they break things down. That's a combination of training too much. They're in the gym every day for an hour, 2 hours, not sleeping, and the poor diet. So there's this trifecta that causes their system to slowly break down. So that will explain for a lot of folks why their injuries just don't get better, or why they start to accumulate other injuries. They start with the plantar fasciitis. Now we got a heel problem. Now we got a knee problem, on and on and on.
It's amazing. And still to this day, after 43 years of practice, it's amazing how everything is tied in, from that structural, biomechanical, nutritional, and even stress patterns that increasing inflammatory reactions within the body. But this is really an applicable, you know, condition that we're talking about. We're coming up to the break, your halfway mark of the program. This is incredibly interesting. I got a lot more questions for Dr. Browning. Don't go away. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Tom Rozelle Live on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We have a very applicable and interesting program for you today, one that we've been talking about, your feet and why they ache and why they throb. And, you know, you've heard all the advertising out there on diabetic neuropathies or neuropathies general, and you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and plantar fasciitis, and gee, just my feet hurt, and I can't do the things I want to do. You know, if your feet hurt, you can't do anything. If your feet hurt, you can't go out and have fun with your family. If your feet hurt, you're not getting off the chair. So why do they hurt? So who better than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning, in studio with me today. You'll be your host, your presenter, this Wednesday evening, the 30th October. Wow, where's this year gone? 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax. Those of you know where we are. We're just off the National Capital Beltway, off of Route 50, about a half a mile. We're real easy to find. And this is an opportunity for you to really learn from one of the best presenters ever. And he makes things extremely applicable and simple to understand. So join us. All you have to do is go to rozellecare.com. That's rozellecare.com, or call 703-698-7117 and register. But furthermore, let's get into the program. Dr. Harlan, we're talking about all kinds of things in the first half of the program, from, you know, the mechanical chains that affect the feet, the diabetic patterns, the neuropathic patterns. We said there's a little distinguishing feature. It doesn't have to be diabetic, but it's inflammatory, just beating up those nerve roots. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because it seems to be something that many of our listening audience is extremely aware of because of all the advertising that they've heard this station and other stations. But I wanted to, you know, make some distinctions and also look at what treatment should really look like when it comes to those types of things. And, you know, I know that, you know, you have a background not only especially in neurology and neurological applications, but nutrition and applied kinesiology and so forth. So when we dissect this problem, this neuropathic ouch in our feet, these diabetic patterns, the inflammatory patterns, how do you begin to approach it really, and what should a patient expect if it's being done properly?
Well, I think the first thing is you look at the, you know, the location. Is it on both sides versus one side? That's telling in itself. Typically, when you have a neuropathy, a diabetic neuropathy or some sort of metabolic neuropathy, it's going to be in both sides. So if it's one-sided, my thought goes a little less to the diabetes and a little bit more to maybe something mechanical. What's the history of the problem? Did it start after an injury? Was it slowly progressive? You know, that type of thing. Does it get better or worse during activity or some time of the day? And are there other things that are showing up at the same time? In other words, do we have pain or discomfort in the foot and the knee or in the leg or in the back? So you look at all those, then it gives you a pretty good roadmap on what to do next as far as diagnostics. What tests do we want to do in office, you know, orthopedic, neurological, blood tests. Those are very valuable. Do we want to do some sort of imaging? And in some cases, you would check the nerve itself. You would do what's called a nerve conduction velocity that sees how well the nerve works. Or maybe sometimes you would check to see the muscle, how well it works, or the blood vessel. You would get some sort of sonogram to see if there's some sort of occlusion or blockage in the blood vessel as well. So you put all those things together, and most of the time you're coming up with a good diagnosis, and that makes the treatment really much easier.
When you're dealing with a condition called fasciitis, okay, plantar fasciitis, and we hear that all the time, is it mechanical or is it biochemical?
I would say probably 80% mechanical, maybe 20% biochemical, meaning that the person's mechanics are poor and the tissue is being overwhelmed. And sometimes, because the chemistry is not stable, they're acidic or they're dehydrated. That's a big one. Or they don't eat proteins. You got to remember, proteins is the constituent in the building block of all connective tissue. Those types of things can either propagate, you know, the problem or make it worse. So I'd say 80-20.
When you're dealing with a plantar fasciitis, let's talk about the mechanical pieces that are associated with it. Are we talking mechanics of the foot, or are we talking mechanics of something that is contributory to the mechanics or the movement of the foot?
Both. So both. It's you have to look at the way the foot moves. You have to look at the way the big toe moves, the ankle moves, the hip moves. If you don't have good mobility in those joints, then you're going to change the way that you walk, and you'll put more pressure on the bottom of the foot, and it'll prematurely collapse in many cases. It'll just flatten. That's, you know, that pronation. Pronation is normal, by the way. Excessive pronation is not normal. So you want a little give and take there. You have to look at all of those things. Going back to the big toe, when a person can't extend the big toe, then they don't like to toe off. They don't roll from their heel to a flat foot and then go off their big toe. So what they'll do is they'll short step. They'll hit their heel, they'll go flat, and then they'll lift their foot real quick. But that loads the tissue differently. And then, you know, we often will get these bigger calves that start to develop. And because the calf attaches to the plantar fascia on the bottom of the foot, then it pulls on it, and lo and behold, we start to get this plantar fasciitis.
You know, one of the conditions that I see on a regular basis, we all do, every doctor that deals with mechanics of the structural system of the body, is basically a hammer toe. That big protruding on your big toe to the medial side, that lump. Where does that come from? What is it really?
You know, the bunions. The big toe starts to go inwards. It's called valgus. That almost always happens with ladies with or guys that have their shoes are too tight. The toe box, that's the end of the shoe, is confining the toes, so it pushes them inwards. It can also happen when the foot pronates too much, as the foot collapses, during my talk we'll show this. As the foot collapses, the toe naturally wants to go in. So, but if it collapses too much, then it makes the toe protrude too much, and then over time the tissue breaks down, and then it becomes arthritic. That's that deformity is actual new bone, and if we get enough of it, then it doesn't allow the toe to move, and that's when they often will go in there and shave it down. That's a whole different ball game, and so we prefer not to go down that road.
In a perfect world, can that bunion, that protrusion, be reversed?
So the question is this: is the bunion a problem because you don't like the way it looks, or is the bunion a problem because it causes you pain or dysfunction? If it's just you don't like the way it looks, I would suggest you do not mess with it, because you're going down a rabbit hole that you're probably not going to come out of. Big toe is very important when it comes to movement. If there's pain and the toe still moves, then there's a lot that you can do for it. If there's pain and it doesn't move, then your best bet before you start to think about shaving it down is to actually immobilize it. Okay? It's not moving at all, then you want to make sure it doesn't move anymore. It's that movement of a joint that's stuck that's causing it to irritate. So there's kind of a stepwise fashion that you want to go with the big toe before you start shaving it down and doing surgeries. That's, you know, messing with feet that's like playing with fire.
So two distinguishing situations. When you're dealing with that type of malformation, if you will, of the big toe, and again, you know, emphasizing how important to gait that big toe is, because you have to propel off of it, you know, to have a normal mechanical pattern, and if you don't, it affects everything else. You know, you see people with toe spacers. They put them in to separate the toes and so forth. Good or bad?
I actually will sometimes recommend them to my patients to wear at night. It's just a passive way to open up the toe, which will allow the tissue to, you know, get a breather, so to speak. So, you know, I think it's a good thing. The interesting thing that you'll see with the toe spacers is this. Very often when we have dysfunction in the feet and the toes start to collapse in, it'll cause the muscles in the feet to inhibit themselves. If you put toe spacers in, specifically between the big toe and the second toe, and you retest those muscles, you'll actually see them jumpstart and start working.
They'll start firing.
Yeah, they'll start firing. So that's a great way for me to show the patient how important it is for that big toe to have a good orientation. So I do recommend them in some cases. I don't recommend them if that's just your end game, you know. So a lot of people just want to just, you know, take a pill or do this and call it quits. So, you know, if you're not going to rehabilitate it, then you're probably not going to get the outcome you want, certainly down the road. You know, maybe it'll help for 6 months, 8 months, I don't know, but down the road, they'll be back with the same problem, and usually it's a little worse.
The medial arch is so important in the mechanics of that toe. And often, you know, I'll play with a patient, I'll have them on the table, and the toe is, you know, turned in, and I'll pull on the medial arch to kind of induce a strengthening of that arch. And when I do that, you'll see that toe pull back out. So, but the medial arch is connected all the way through, particularly in a reactive pattern, if you'll, meaning that one muscle is working in relationship to another when it comes to the gastroc and the soleus. How often is that connection true? And then what's the triggering mechanism there?
Well, the pattern that I typically find is there's overactivity and dominance of that posterior group of muscles, the gastrocnemius, the calf muscle, and the soleus, and that comes at the expense of sabotaging all these smaller intrinsic muscles that really help to refine the position of our foot. We have two muscles called the tibialis anterior and tibialis posterior, and they wrap around both sides of the foot and lift it up like a stirrup. And it's important for those muscles to do that because it maintains the arch. Well, if the calf becomes dominant, the gastrocnemius and the soleus that you talked about, then those small strap muscles get a little lazy, and then the arch starts to drop. So you have to have a little give and take. And for that reason, that's why you almost always, with any person who's had some sort of therapy on their foot, they're going to do a calf stretch. And I think that's good. It's just the matter of figuring out, okay, why is the calf dominant to begin with? You know, you don't want to just keep stretching it if it's just going to, return to its resting state of being tight. And usually that's because there's weakness somewhere else.
You know, the foot is such a primary example of the things that we talk about all the time and how everything in the body, neurologically and mechanically, are related one to the other. And things can turn on and turn off muscles. And I want to get into an energetic platform with you just a little bit. And it's a program that we could have all by itself. But when you're dealing with muscles, you're dealing with nerves, you're dealing with reflexive patterns, you're dealing with, as we talked about earlier, different nutritional pieces that support tissue. But we're also, if we take it to an Asian market, we're talking about the energetic platforms. And on the feet, you have channels that end and channels that begin. And some that I see on a regular basis are, one is the kidney channel, which is on the bottom of the foot. That's where it starts, and it moves all the way up and it goes up. But here's, and I'm going to pick on this one specifically, simply because of the fact that in Asian medicine, the kidney channel that begins in the bottom of the foot, kidney one is there, is related to fight, flight, it's related to the adrenal system. And that adrenal system has the responsibility of producing steroids and other things that allow ligaments and fascia and tendons to be solid. Can that piece contribute significantly or be a primary mover into the foot breaking down?
Absolutely. So what you're referring to is those pathways in acupuncture called meridians, and they have a starting point and an ending point, and a lot of them start on the foot or end on the foot. So if there's dysfunction in that meridian and the ability for energy to transfer through that meridian, then it will often manifest at different points. And certainly in the foot, there's a lot of important points that will be impacted when there's dysfunction there. So yeah, you have to look at those components of meridian therapy when you're looking at big picture, especially when the person has failed, you know, all types of therapies, you know, even the conservative ones, the pharmacological, you know, the surgical. Then very often it's somewhere hidden deep in the acupuncture system.
And interesting, just an anecdotal pointing out, if you will, on the big toe, there's a beginning channel meridian, if you will, from the liver. And, you know, that we have gout formation in the big toe because of that. You have energy that's not moving. But it also can affect, in a subtle way, before that gout formation is even identified, the muscle patterns and the strengthening or weakening or the inflammatory pathways. And so subsequently, the foot hurts like crazy and nobody knows why. And it hasn't gotten swollen yet. It hasn't become deformed yet. But in the initial stages, you may see a lot of that as well.
Yeah, certainly. You talk about stagnation of energy, and it can manifest in the big toe. And then all of a sudden, the person gets this diagnosis of gout when their uric acid maybe is a tiny bit high, so that it becomes really convenient to give them that diagnosis. And then they're put on the medication. Maybe it helps. I think it does. I'm not sure it does. And then lo and behold, a couple years go by, they're still on the medication, and they're still getting this on-again, off-again toe problem when it was really probably an acupuncture issue.
Now you have to look at all of it when it comes to people. I think the point that we're trying to get across to you is simply this. You have to identify what the triggering mechanisms are, what the cause is, and if you can understand it, if you can diagnose it, if you know where the mechanics are being initiated or are failing, you can fix this. You don't have to live with it, but I mean, truly fix it, not support it, not put orthotics in, which is a cast, if you will, for the rest of your life, if you're willing to take the action steps that are necessary. My guest in studio today, Dr. Harlan Browning. He'll be your host, your presenter, this Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. at the Roselle Center for Healing in Fairfax. Love to have you as our guest. I promise you, you'll go home with a ton of data. We're coming up to a break. We have to pay attention to those who bring you Dr. Tom Roselle Live. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages. Thank you.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live in studio as usual, Saturdays during Redskins season at 4 p.m. After Redskins season, we'll be back to Sundays at noon. But my guest in studio has been none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about your feet and why they hurt and why they throb and why they give you so much trouble, but more importantly, what you can do about it. And it's always a pleasure because this man is amazing. He comes up with ideas and thought processes that are very complex and makes them so simple that you can use them and you can take them home. Dr. Harlan, you know, we've been talking about the feet and, you know, how bad they are and, you know, they can destroy our lives and they're connected to all kinds of things. There's muscle patterns. They're locked into nutritional pieces that are destroying bodies. But this Wednesday evening, the 30th, you're going to be talking about this whole mechanism from neuropathic pain to things called plantar fasciitis to mechanical failures and so forth. But more importantly, that people can do something about it. Let's talk a little bit about what it is that you're going to do this this Wednesday evening, the 30th, and walk us through that. What can people expect by showing up? What can they take home with them?
Well, you know, I'm going to start by talking about what normal is. You can't talk about abnormal unless you understand normal. So we'll look at the way the foot should function, the knee should function, and the hip. If we look closer at that and we understand what needs to take place when we walk and then compare it to what's going on with, you know, a patient's problem, it becomes evident that there's issues that need to be addressed. We'll talk about pain patterns themselves. That's probably one of the most important components. Again, I talked about it earlier. Is it a local? Is it a global? Is it periodic? Is it chronic? You know, is it acute? That gives us an indication of where it's coming from. And then we bring together all the aspects that you touched on. Is there a neurological component? Is there a biochemical? Is there an acupuncture meridian connection there? You look at those three sides of the triangle, so to speak, and then you're going to have a pretty good understanding of where you need to go from there. That's when we talk about the testing. Do we need an MRI? Do we need an X-ray? Do we need this test? Do we need orthotics? What exercises do we have to put in place? And more importantly, what lifestyle changes? A lot of folks have lifestyle changes that need to take place, and they don't do it. They don't exercise. They don't move. They don't stretch. They don't eat right. And they wonder why their leg gets worse and worse and worse.
You know, it's important to understand that everything is connected to everything else in our system. It can't be isolated. You can't just go get a pair of orthotics and wear them for the rest of your life. You can't go and continue to get injections because the nerves are inflamed and irritated. You can't diagnose the result, meaning we talked a little bit about gout in the big toe and the deviation of it. We, you know, all of those things have a why is that. There's a relationship that has to be understood and appreciated for something to be fixed properly. You know, we talked a little bit about in the first half of the program walking barefoot, and we got a couple minutes. And why is that so important when it comes to feet?
Well, we're designed to walk barefoot. Now, I will say this: I'm not advocating barefoot running. We could have a whole nother show on that. I mean, the foot is designed to contact the ground ideally without anything on it. The issue becomes we put shoes on babies from day one, so then they develop accordingly. Their foot is used to having a shoe on it, but when possible, when we're around the house, walking without the shoe or in without the sock is good because it gives a lot of input to our nervous system. There's something in the body called the positive support reaction, meaning as soon as our foot hits the ground, it tells our nervous system to hold us upright versus gravity. And when we wear shoes that don't fit right or we have foot dysfunction, that doesn't take place. So poor feet often are a cause of folks that have these lingering low back problems because their foot is not telling their muscles to hold them up, and then they get weak.
I know you're going to cover that and so many other things this Wednesday evening, the 30th. And please join us. All you have to do is go online at Rozelle Center or RozelleCare.com. And join us. Join Dr. Browning. You will not be disappointed. We're coming up to the end of the program. Have to see you next time. We love you all. Bye.